Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get ready to climb into the musical memory machine and take a trip back to 1994 as we revisit the music that came out 30 years ago. 1994 was a year that defined our generation when Kurt Cobain took his own life. We also got important albums like Purple from Stone Temple Pilots, Super Unknown by Soundgarden, 16 Stone from Bush, Jar Flies by Alice in Chains, Throwing Copper from Live, and Vitalogy from Pearl Jam. R.E.M. tried to plug in with Monster, while Nirvana unplugged on MTV. Mariah Carey transformed into a Christmas character, while Green Day and Offspring pushed punk onto the radio. Hootie and the Blowfish, the Dave Matthews Band, the Cranberries, and Blues Traveler all entered the scene and helped define that mid-90s alternative sound. Hip-hop had a fresh year with albums from Nas, the Beastie Boys, Bone Thugs and Harmony, and a newcomer called the Notorious B.I.G. So join the Prisoners of Rock and Roll as we break out our flannel shirts and take a look back at the music of 1994. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 78. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm rocking my flannel shirt and my Doc Martens tonight with a man who is my friend first and my co-host second, the one and only Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll, sponsored by Boldfoot Socks, as well as McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia, and our show is proudly part of the family over at the Pantheon Podcast Network. What's going on, brother?
I'm ready to rock and roll, brother. 1994.
The year we graduated high school. Shit.
Holy shit, Mio. What happened? You're saying it feels like yesterday. I said it feels like it was 30 years ago.
30 years ago, yeah.
I did a lot of living in the 30 years.
There's a lot of music on this this playlist that was really important to me growing up. I just like there's a handful of these albums that were just really important parts of my listening rotation, and there's a lot of shit that I still listen to.
Well, you know, I was thinking, Bruce, these songs are so great they never went away. Most of these songs never went away. They just kept playing and playing and playing for the last 30 years.
There wasn't many songs that I had to go like, oh, I remember that tune.
No, I barely even listen to the playlist because it's all on the radio all the time.
I was listening to it a lot over the weekend. I was doing some stuff in my pub shed, my backyard, moving some things around, including framing my poster from the McCusker's 45th anniversary party. I bought a frame for it to hang it on the wall.
That's a collector's item, my friend.
It is a collector's item. It's individually numbered, but
I did that myself.
Awesome. And so I was listening to the playlist a lot, and I was watching a lot of these music videos, and it was great. It was just a cool trip down memory lane.
I had a lot of fun in 94. That's the first year I saw Fish in concert.
Okay.
So, like, while everybody was, like, listening to Nirvana, listening to Stone Temple Pilots, Soundgarden, I was listening to Fish. You know, I was doing something totally different than the grunge thing. You know, like maybe the grunge thing was a little bit too sad for me.
Okay. Maybe,
I don't think it had the musicianship, you know, like that I was searching for.
You said that before, that grunge was too much of a bummer for you.
I tend to like music fun. None of that, besides like some Pearl Jam songs, none of it seemed fun at all. I mean, there was some aggression in Nirvana that was fun. I think you can't teach what those guys did, and that's passion. And that's what grunge was mostly passion.
That's fair. I mean, I guess it kind of comes out of the punk movement too, a little bit with like the apathy and the attitude and shit like that. It's interesting too, because like trying to organize all this stuff into like categories to talk about on the playlist, it's kind of like the grunge thing was kind of almost over by now. And a lot of that is that when Kurt Cobain died.
Yeah.
Right. And in April, he killed himself. But some of these bands, like, you know, we can get into it, but it's like, is Stone Temple Pilots a grunge band? Is Bush a grunge band? I don't think so. Like, you know, sometimes they get thrown in that bucket. Sometimes they're not. I don't know.
I think it's the same thing when like rock and roll bands came out in the 80s. They were called hair bands. No matter, even the Black Crowes were considered hair band in the beginning.
Now they're on like the classic rock station because they fit more of that Southern rock sound, but
too bad they don't play anything else than that Tom Jones song.
So I put everything on here, and we're setting up. I was like, holy shit, man, we've got 5 hours of music on our playlist. We won't be getting to everything, but there's a ton of shit on here. But before we got into it, I looked up like what happened in music, some big things, because I remember a couple of these things. So like Pink Floyd went on their last tour. Did you go to that?
I was working that day. I was working at Pep Boys, and everybody went, and I was the new guy. So they made me work, and so I missed it.
I think you and I are the only two people who didn't go, because everybody I went to high school with, the whole group I ran with, they all went.
Oh, yeah. I still curse people out.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I was like, I'll catch them next time.
And 94 was also, and I'll circle back, finish the list, but 94 was also, like, I was working in Sam Goody, so it was like a lot of these albums, like, I was listening to them a lot because we were like playing them in the store to like promote things. So.
Sure.
But, all right, so Pink Floyd went on their last tour. Pearl Jam started their whole battle with Ticketmaster.
Wow.
Yeah. The Eagles.
Good luck with that shit.
Yeah. They tried.
Yeah.
The Eagles reunited with the Hell Freezes Over tour, and that was a big deal because that was the first time that arena show tickets went over $100.
I remember that.
Right? I remember that, too, and I was like, I'm not going to that. $100? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that being like an issue.
Lisa Left Eye Lopez from TLC burns down Andre Rison's house.
Yeah.
She
was
all
thug. She was gangsta.
Put all his shit in a bathtub, all his clothes, and lit it on fire and burned his house down.
Was she thinking like the whole house wasn't going to go up?
I have no idea.
Like the tub is safe. It's like a safe space.
Right. Woodstock 94 happened.
Okay.
David Crosby got his new liver.
Yeah.
Warner Music bought 49% of Sub Pop Records. We did a whole show on Sub Pop and the grunge. And then, of course, Kurt Cobain passed away. So that kind of like sets the stage of what was going on in music at the time. So, all right. So the first bucket that I kind of put all these things into was grunge. And the first album I put on here on the top of the list was Jar of Flies by Alice in Chains. They're one of my favorite bands from the 90s.
I know they are. You're a big Wayne Stanley fan.
I am. When I was working outside and I was listening to our playlist, I then went fired up the whole MTV Unplugged and I watched the entire thing. I'm working on a freelance article for Pop Matters. I write for them sometimes. I'm writing one on Jar of Flies.
Wow.
This album was so cool because Alice in Chains to me was one of those bands. Like, I didn't like the song Man in the Box. It just, it was weird. Sure. It was creepy. But I remember being in Tower Records and they were playing Wood. I think it was the single soundtrack. Yeah. And I remember stopping and just going, what is this? I have to have this.
Yes.
And those are the coolest moments in music. When you hear something, you're just like, what is this? I need it.
Especially in a record store, dude.
Yeah.
You know, I miss that. Like walking around a record store and you hear the overhead. You're like, what is that? You know?
And you go running up to the guy asking him, like, what are you playing right now? This is so cool.
Yeah.
And
the good old days.
And I remember when Jar of Flies came out, I mean, I was already an Alice in Chains fan, and we're like, fuck yeah, new Alice in Chains. And we like ripped it open and we put it in the cassette player, the CD player in the store. And then you hear it and you're like, what is this? Because it's so different than anything else they did.
So, it's so like more of a unplugged kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like there's some orchestra on it. It just showed that like the diversity that they had in their music, that they were willing to do something so different.
Yeah, Jerry Cantrell is a genius. And what he used Lane Stanley for, you know, in my eyes, Lane Stanley was the sideman.
For a heavy band, too, they sang a lot of harmonies, the two of them together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, dude, I mean, I could talk about this album for an hour, but you put No Excuses on here. Let's play a little bit of it. It's all right. It's just so smooth sounding compared to some of their other, you know, their other stuff was so just like sloppy and grungy and sludgy.
I love the sound of the drums on this.
I do too.
The snare drum just pops. You know, he's a great drummer.
Probably one of the biggest albums of the year. And that was the MTV Unplugged by Nirvana, another group showing a completely different side of themselves with an album. And this, I don't remember this, but this came out after Kurt Cobain died.
Oh, I remember. Oh, absolutely. That's why it was so huge. It was like what, 2-3 months after he died, it came out?
It was like right around the holiday. I think the beginning of the holiday season, it came out.
What was great about the Nirvana one, you know, they showed them a different side. You think they were just a one-trick pony kind of thing. And here they were doing Lead Belly songs, just songs that you think you would never hear acoustically by Nirvana. They covered that Bowie song. That was huge.
We did a whole show with the Warden on MTV Unplugged. And just how I was talking to somebody at work about this the other day, just how important, like culturally in the music, MTV Unplugged was, right? To get to see this band doing something totally different.
Yeah, in a cool setting. You know, it's brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's play a little bit of The Man Who Sold the World.
Wow. I remember coming out and then at the end of the song, he goes, that was a David Bowie song. And it like rocket shit. Like, you know, it was a huge success.
He was only in the music scene for 3 years, right? He dies at Nevermind came out in 91 and he died in 94. And just how such a huge impact his music had to everybody our age. I mean, I know you're not a huge Nirvana fan, but you know, in general.
But I respect what he did. You know, his songwriting skills are fucking amazing. That to write this song in a pop way, it's brilliant. It just wasn't my thing.
That's fair.
I have it on vinyl. It's one of my favorite vinyls to listen to now.
The MTV Unplugged?
Oh, no. Never mind. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I got you.
I would like to have that on vinyl, Unplugged. That would be bad. I'm going to look that up.
I put Stone Temple Pilots in the grunge bucket again. Like, are they grunge? I don't think so.
I think they are.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, they got a little crunch to them.
Their first three albums are just, they all were just huge smashes. They were fucking great, right? It's like to do that consistently, just put up three banger albums in a row.
You said banger.
I did. I'm showing up
that you're a millennial.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hey. All right, let me play something, just cut off my embarrassment here.
Scott Weiland was a genius in the studio.
He was really talented, man.
So talented. I mean,
I love the way the opening guitar, like it comes in at you, like it waves at first instrumental before the rest of the band kicks in.
And they're another band I did not care for.
I like them a lot.
He was a little bit too much for me, man. Yeah, I think he was a great front man. You know, he was definitely a sliver on the fucking stage, man. You know, but man, he really did a great job in recording sessions. I mean, flawless. And every song, he sounds like a different person on every song.
He had that versatility with his voice, right? He could sound a little bit like Eddie Vedder and go real low, and he could go higher. Yeah, that's an album I still listen to. I was lucky enough, I saw them several times in this era. It was always cool because they would have like an acoustic set that they would have like in the ceiling, and it would like drop down, and then like he and like one other dude would climb into it, and they would do it like four songs like acoustically, and then they would go back to like rocking out. It was cool. Another band that did MTV Unplugged that wasn't afraid to kind of show a different side of them.
I love the MTV Unplugged, actually. I love he's sitting there in the rocking chair, and he's like kind of chubby. It was like he wasn't like such a full-blown junkie yet. He has a chubby face. His voice is strong. It's a shame how he went downhill fast. I mean, he was just a mess, famously, not too far into their career.
Right. It would, when Slash is like, I can't work with you anymore, you're too much of an asshole with Velvet Revolver. Yeah.
I seen them a couple times. They were fun. Yeah.
You said on the show like a couple of years ago, like that Scott Weiland desperately wanted to be David Bowie.
Oh, and God. Yeah. I saw Scott Weiland on his solo tour. For some reason I went, and that whole solo album was like him wanting to be fucking Bowie, like hardcore. Like when we were talking about Bowie, the plain white Duke,
the thin white Duke.
That's like what he was going for. He probably had a contact in his eye to make him look like more like Bowie, one eye different than the other. But he was great on stage. He was an awesome performer. I seen him.
You said he wasn't just a singer. He was a front man.
Yeah.
But
he's an icon.
Sure. Sure.
You think they'll go to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
You know what, man? I'm kind of surprised that they haven't been nominated yet since you bring that up. But Soundgarden, they're not in yet. So I think Soundgarden's got to get it before any of these other bands in this era.
I agree.
Pearl Jam, next on the list, man. The Vitalogy album.
Great album, man. Did you get it at midnight when it came on sale?
I did not. I was still so working in the music store. I was kind of like, all right, dude, I'll just get it the day it opens. I'll throw a copy of it in the stock room for myself. But I remember like, putting all the promotional stuff everywhere on like NCAT, displays. And that was always the cool thing of working in a music store back then. It would be like, they'd bring all kinds of posters and stuff to put up, and you would take the stuff that you wanted
all
or when you're done with
steal.
It. Yeah, you'd take it home for yourself at the end when you're done with it. You'd get copies of stuff like 2 weeks ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was the ass end of the music industry, but it was still a cool, for a bunch of high school kids, it was a cool job.
Oh, my God. It was the best job I ever fucking had, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's because you met me.
Yeah, of course.
Right, right.
The dynamic duo.
Right, right. Here we are still talking about music 30 years later, but
they're like, get some work done.
Here's a little bit of Better Man from Vitalogy.
She opens the door, she rolls over, pretends to sleep as he looks her over. She lies and says she's in love with him. Can't find a better man. She dreams in color, she dreams in red. Can't find a better man. Can't find a better man. Can't find a better man.
That's like two songs in one.
And it just takes off,
Oh, God. When they play that live, it's killer.
That's
a
song.
As much as the song's played out, dude, when they play that live, they bring it, man.
The song, just listening to it, I find it hard to believe that song is 30 years old. But
I was,
it's
I, I was just listening to that and like, imagine being like an intern at the record, like at the studio where they're recording, and you hear like the first draft of this song. You like automatically be like, holy shit, I'm hearing history right now. Like right off the bat, it's like it's a banger, dog.
Right. I think we had those experiences with some of this music when you're 17, 18 years old and you're so impressionable and you're not jaded about shit yet and dealing with your mortgage. And you're just, you know, the cliche of sitting in your room, just listening to music. And I just said that cause I was like, I don't want to go on the rant about like, listen to it with headphones, but it's also like just listening to it and not doing anything else. Right. Cause every time I listen to a shit, so
you're driving
much
in the car, you're doing housework.
Right. You're at work. You're running the bar. I'm sitting at my desk and just sitting there and you're just focusing on it. Like, that was what we used to do when we were kids, but it's like you don't do it that much anymore.
I think it was a thing that was a lot with a hi-fi, like growing up, you know? Like I was watching a movie from the 70s and the kid was laying on the floor with the two speakers in between his head, you know? And he was really listening to it. Nobody listens to music like that anymore.
No, I think Henry Rollins does, but that's, you know, most people don't. And out of all these bands we've talked about so far, they're the only ones that are like still around. I mean, Alice in Chains is around, but with a different singer, and
he's good.
I like him too, but they're just, it's just a different, it's no, not Lane
it's
Staley.
A different band.
Yeah.
They'd be playing arenas. If Wayne Staley was still alive, they'd be playing arenas.
I watched an interview with, I guess it was right when they started recording with William Duvall, and it was all of them, and they were asking Jerry Cantrell about like dealing with Lane's death, and he was kind of like, I wasn't surprised. He's like, but we were right there. We were ready to take that next step in our career to like superstardom, and the whole thing just, you know, when he died. But anyway.
About that news, did you get that clipping I sent you?
When he passed away.
I clipped that out the day of his death or the day after his death, and it was just more about how they found his body.
And
I don't know why I kept it, dude, because I could care less, you know. And I found it in a book this week, and here we're talking about it.
Well, it was really sad how he died, like they didn't find
but it wasn't a shocker
days.
It was like, oh, no, about time.
No, absolutely not. Yeah,
I mean, especially we talk about him on the Sessions of the Faculty soundtrack.
Yeah,
you know, like he had no teeth. He was just fucked up.
Totally a band that they needed that all his demons is what made their music so good, but it ultimately killed him.
Absolutely. They definitely went to the dark side.
Super Unknown from Soundgarden comes out this year. I never need to hear Black Hole Sun ever again.
But hell no. Spoon Man's a good song.
Other than that, Black Hole Sun, just because it was so friggin' overplayed.
It's so big, man.
Yeah.
And that
it was
video,
everywhere.
The video was huge. Everything was melting and shit.
Yep. It's like cutting edge graphics for 1994. Let's play a little bit of Spoon Man, because you're right. This just comes right out the gate. Just blows Spoon Man. It just blows you up. That was like Lane Staley singing it, not Chris Cornell.
Yeah,
man on a box. Man, that is so like,
Matt
I can almost
Cameron's.
Not hear him. They're so bright with Matt Cameron's drumming.
Yeah. Best drummer that came out of that time, dude.
Out of the 90s?
Oh, yeah. Hands down. Best drummer come out of the 90s.
He was so, Chris Cornell, it sounds so like effortless. Like, he just like, he could just uncork those notes. I know we did a whole show on Chris Cornell. It's just like, man, just.
He was a freak of nature.
That voice is just so powerful.
His octave range was huge.
He's crazy, yeah.
He could sing anything.
He really could, right? Because remember we played like that the theme for that show, Vinyl. He does like that old like soul cover, and we're just like, yeah. Holy shit, what is that?
Yeah, even his like version of like Nothing Compares to You, you know. Yeah. He's just a great talent, and it's a shame he left us too.
Yeah, that really bothered. I talked about this before, but he was the guy that was still standing, right? He was supposed to be like that grunge rocker who was supposed to be making music in his 60s and stuff, and really sad.
Didn't make any sense. You know, he went and played a show, played a killer show. Not, you know, he just went back and did what he did.
Just, you know, mental illness, man. It's just
the last song he did was Jesus Pose.
Christ Pose.
Yeah. And he stood up there like he was hanging on the cross. And then like 2 hours later, he was dead.
Yeah. So it's so tragic. That I feel like that bothered me more than Kurt Cobain dying, but
because he was older, more mature. Like, you think he would got over the hump.
And you knew he had an alcohol problem, but yeah, he thought it was kind of like done with a lot of that shit. But
yeah,
I don't know.
You know, he was very arrogant in the '90s, but when we went and saw him all those years ago, he was so humble. I couldn't fucking believe it.
The reunion tour with Soundgarden.
He was so humble. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe, because every time I saw him, he was like, you guys are lucky to be here to see us. That was like his MO. Like, seriously, that's what he seemed like. But when we saw him, he was just so humble.
Yeah. I didn't see them in the '90s. I saw them a couple times after they reunited, that time with you. And then I saw them like at a festival, and I saw Audioslave a couple times.
Yeah, I saw Audioslave a few times.
Yeah.
I saw Soundgarden like 3 times. I saw Audioslave once. I seen him on a solo tour. I caught him a lot.
It's awesome. The next band, and maybe one of the most disliked grunge bands of the '90s, and that's Hole.
Wah, wah, wah. I don't even know what to fucking say about them. Could we just skip over them? We gotta play
them. Bag of the week. Dun, dun, dun.
She is. Are we even gonna spend time on her?
Here, let's play the. Okay, that's good.
That's enough. Yeah. Why give her any attention? Why give her any attention? I'm not going to waste our show time.
I don't like her. I don't like that album.
I don't like her. Pure at the end. She's an awful person.
I liked Melissa Auf-de-Maur, their bass player. I liked looking at Melissa Auf-de-Maur. she wound up going into she replaced Darcy in Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The redhead. She's talented. Okay.
And the drummer went on to play for Motley Crue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For a Hole?
Hmm. Yep.
Okay.
When Tommy Lee was in jail.
Punk music, man. Punk. So 94, like, punk really takes a step forward into like the mainstream radio, and largely because of two albums. And the first one was Green Day's major label debut album, Dookie. The album went diamond. It's crazy because, like, you know, reading a little bit about it, like, all their fans, like, the OG fans were – so I just used OG and Banger in one show. What is happening to me? People were calling them a sellout for, like, going to a major label. It's like, you know, and that's the whole thing of, like, the punk industry. That you're just like, what
they're
the hell?
Really, yeah, they're really cruel and harsh, the punk rockers. I am, too, though. I have my issues with Green Day. Now – when Green Day came out, I was already listening to punk. I was listening to the Ramones. I was listening to Clash. I was listening to Sex Pistols. Now, all these albums have a production on them that sound punk rock. Now, when Green Day came out, they came out with this overproduced album that sounds fucking amazing. I'm sorry, that's not punk.
I could not
production
agree with
value.
I couldn't agree with you more that I don't put them in the same stratosphere as the Ramones and the Clash and the Sex Pistols.
No, because it's just the production value sounds too good. Like, you know, the Ramones tried to sound a certain way. You know, the '70s had great recording studios and shit, but they wanted to sound a certain way.
I mean, if you made a big timeline of punk music and like the Sex Pistols and the Ramones are on one side and like Avril Lavigne is on the other, Green Day is more towards the Ramones and the Sex Pistols, but yeah, but they're not Yeah, they're not that far extreme of it.
I really dig them. I think Trey Cool is a great drummer. He's unbelievable. I think Billy Joel Armstrong. Yeah, Billy Joel. He's a great songwriter. I love American Idiot. That's my favorite. That's the only Green Day album I ever bought. I have it on vinyl. That's the only time I ever bought a Green Day album. I think they're great. They're a rock and roll band. They're not a punk band. Why? Because he dyes his hair. Like, I remember watching their 94 Woodstock performance, and he's up on stage and he's pointing around. He's like, look, that guy's a punk rocker. And he's telling everybody that he is, you know? And I'm like, that's what you are, motherfucker. You know, I'm a punk rocker. And I tell everybody that I am.
But they've also been around for 30 years, right? They're still making music that gets a lot of airplay.
They even made a Broadway play, man.
Right. What's more punk rock than that?
I don't know.
I totally remember the first time I heard that album. I remember there was like a staff meeting at the record store, and we had to come in like a Sunday morning before it opened. And the manager was like, we have to play this. And it was like a cassette tape and put it in. And it was like, turned it up. We had a kick-ass sound system in the store, like turned it up as loud as it would go and be like, this is so fucking awesome. And I was like, yeah, okay. I was digging it. I was never like oh my God, I love Green Day. I don't think there's many times I turn them on while I want to listen to something, but I totally understand the impact that they had.
I love Basket Case. I'm basically more for the drums than anything.
Let's hear it.
All right.
Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stuck? I went to a shrink to analyze my dreams. She says it's like a sex that's bringing me down.
Great song.
It is.
Song. It just seemed like everybody followed their blueprint after them. And then a billion bands sounded like the same production value as they did. And that's when you came out bands like Sum 41 and Blink 182. And, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. The 90s, late 90s punk was at its worst, bro.
Well, that's like, when grunge breaks and then there's all those like second tier, third tier grunge bands come running in.
Yeah.
You know, like, and say with alternative 90s bands, right? For every, you know, you've got the top tier like Weezer, and then you've got like Tonic and Seven Mary Three and all those other bands that had like one song.
Yeah.
And Green Day did that to punk music.
They brought it into the mall. They took it out of the sewer.
That's a great way to put it.
They took it out of the sewer and brought it into the mall.
That's a great analogy. The other band that had a huge thing in this year was The Offspring. And this album
was great. I thought they were just a rock and roll band. I never considered them a punk band.
Well, and again, it's kind of like the same thing with, are they as a band grunge? Are they rock? Are they, you know, what are they? They're also, this album is the best-selling album to ever be released on an independent label. So this, like, they were on that Epitaph Records. Which is a little punk rock.
Their work ethic. I dig them a lot because they did shit on their own terms. Like, they really did pay their dues and make it up the long way. You know, they didn't get like play like a bunch of showcase shows and got signed. No, they fucking dogged it out, man.
Muck and grinded in the corners.
And the lead singer is a really intelligent guy. He went to an Ivy League school, I believe.
He did. Here's a little bit of Come Out and Play.
Fashion up, fashion.
they have a pretty successful career. You know, you still see them around and they still release albums and they're still on the radio every day.
He has a PhD in molecular biology from USC. And he, pretty interesting dude. I don't know why, like, some of the punk guys are, like, so smart. You know, like, Henry Rollins is, like, the Renaissance man, Dexter Holland.
Because they were all, like, geeks, you know?
Jello Biafra.
They were all, like, just bookworms and geeks. And then one day the geeks became cool.
Like, the singer of the next band, Greg Graffin from Bad Religion, is a PhD. And he is, like, he's taught at Cornell.
Oh, wow.
Which I would love to go to, like, imagine that. You go, like, I'm going to go take a class, and here's the lead singer for Bad Religion is my professor.
But, wow.
I love Bad Religion, man. I love this album. He's a little bit of 21st century digital boy.
I never knew too much about them. I seen them open up for Pearl Jam a couple times, and they rocked. But I don't know them at all.
Okay, well, we're gonna see them this spring when they play with Social Distortion.
All right, I'm down with that.
Yeah,
right on.
Yeah, they're one of my daughter's favorite punk bands. So,
how's she making out?
She's doing well, man. She is booking a bunch of trips. She's going to. She was just telling us she's got tickets to. She's going to Stonehenge this weekend. Nice. And then she's got tickets to go tour Anne Frank's house in Amsterdam.
Wow.
And she's going to, like, the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. So she is going to be going to, like, Paris and Amsterdam and all this other shit. So
stay away from the red district, kid.
Yeah, right. Right. She's saying she went out to a pub the other night with some of her friends and, you know, she doesn't know what she's going to do with the Super Bowl because the Super Bowl is not what it comes on at, like, 7 o'clock our time. So it's 12:30 at night. She's like, some of her American friends they're going to try to stay up, or she, like, may just try to watch it the next day and just avoid the news.
Gotta watch the Super Bowl. Gotta be an American. Gotta watch the Super Bowl.
Yep. All right. So the next bucket I have is just, like, rock and roll. And this is kind of, like, rock and alternative, because there's shit that's just, like, all over the place. Kind of pretty much everything else on the list. And I guess maybe one of the bigger albums that came out was the Blue Album from Weezer.
Oh yeah, great album.
Yeah, I never liked them.
Only album I like by them. I get why you don't. Totally.
I think it's like the nerd rock thing just bothers. I don't know. Just something.
The original idea was great, and then they've been around too long, and then they just start writing songs like blueprints, like a chemistry set. You know, like, everything has its place.
He's another dude too that like left the band for a while, and he went to Harvard, and, like, he's another one of those, like, super smart guys. But,
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's just, I don't know what about. I just don't like them.
I hear you. But I hear you.
Here's a little bit of "Say It Ain't So."
It's a different kind of song, different sound at the time. It's very clean compared to a lot of recordings of that time. They're a very clean sounding band.
I think I don't like them for a totally just, like, minor, like, the girl I dated at the time just hated them. And I think it just poisoned my whole attitude towards them. I don't know. But I don't like the cover of Take On Me that they came out with recently. I just, like, it's just too much for me.
I don't like anything they've done in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
30 years ago, that album was rocking. And ever since then, the second album's good too. But, like, after that, forget it. When they start doing Muppet songs and shit. Yeah. Nothing against the Muppets.
They're brilliant. Right, absolutely not.
I have nothing
right.
against, not
right.
at all.
Right.
I'm a Muppet kind of man. You know what I mean? Like,
sure. All right. Well, we can just keep moving on, man. The next one I had on the list, this is one of my favorite albums from this year, and that was The Downward Spiral by Nine Inch Nails. We played Closer coming out of the monologue. This album was like really important to me as a high school kid. I listened to this shit so much.
I got into the Pretty Hate Machine. I never got into this record. I think, again, it's because I was listening to Fish, and this was just really out there shit.
This is some heavy stuff, yeah. like for like, industrial, like the industrial yeah. music. Yeah.
It brought industrial to mainstream, you know?
They did, and that's probably why they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I love Nine Inch Nails. I think they're fucking great. He's amazing.
I read something this week that this is considered a concept album. Like, this tells a story of like one dude like on the downward spiral mentally. And I never heard that before. I never thought of it before.
Oh, I want to listen to it now.
Yeah, I know you're a big concept album guy.
I see an episode coming.
There you go.
I see an episode coming.
There you go. He also recorded the album in the house where Sharon Tate was murdered by the Manson family. And then he was like, he's out getting groceries. He was doing something. Sharon Tate's sister ran into him and was like, you're just exploiting my sister's murder. And he kind of said he felt like shit after that. But
he's a scumbag, too. He's not really a nice guy.
I don't know a whole lot about him.
Yeah. He's just I read Marilyn Manson's book, and I know about the guy from the band. Hey Man, Nice Shot.
Filter.
He was in the band Nine Inch Nails, and the way that Trent Reznor like treated his proteges was awful. He was just an awful, awful person.
Okay. Pantera, Far Beyond Driven.
I'm broken. God, Dimebag was the shit, man.
Nobody sounds like that, man.
I don't even listen to Phil. Fuck him. I like listen to Dime the whole time I'm listening to them. I remember how they was still carrying the flag for metal during the grunge era, the punk rock era of 94. And they were like the only metal band that was on the record charts.
And again, nobody sounded like them, right? Because it wasn't like the super, it's not like Megadeth where it's just like speed, 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 speed. No. And like that higher area of the guitars, their shit was so.
Grooving. Was like, they had a groove.
Yeah, right. It's grooving, right.
they were a groove metal. I think that's a thing that they consider themselves was a groove metal kind of thing. They were slick, man. They were tight. I seen them a few times and. Nothing was like seeing a Pantera show, bro.
I saw them in like 92, 93. And then I saw them last summer on their reunion tour with Zakk Wylde. And it was good. I felt old as shit, but it was good.
Yeah, I didn't go to that. Nothing against anything. I wasn't feeling it. Dime was everything to me. I don't want to see Zakk Wylde playing, you know, a cover band riffs. You know, and I love the drummer that they picked, you know, Charlie Bennett from Anthrax. Nobody's better than him. There's not a better drummer around better than him.
I was reading a little bit about the song 5 Minutes Alone from Pantera off this album that I really like. But I was like, what's the story behind that? So they were opening for Megadeth. And Pantera's playing, and some dude in the crowd was like flipping him the bird and telling him they suck. And Phil like stopped the show and was like, hey, man, there's 18,000 fans here who like us, so shut the fuck up. And then the crowd just beat the shit out of the guy. And the kid and his family wound up suing Pantera, and his dad was like, just give me 5 minutes alone with that Phil guy, and I'll teach him to call out my kid.
Good luck with that shit.
Right, right. And so Phil wrote the song, and I guess Phil was kind of like, bring it.
That sounds like Phil.
Let's shift gears totally, dude. A complete opposite end of the rock alternative spectrum, and that was Oasis's debut album. We should also put on the list, like, who is more dysfunctional, the Gallagher brothers or the Robinson brothers from the Black
or the guys from the Kinks?
Yes, or the McCusker brothers. We could do like a four-way battle.
Tag team match.
Right. This album really brought that British pop rock sound like back into, you know, there's bands like Blur and things like that.
Sure. Opened a whole door to like a new version of English rock.
The Guardian the Guardian newspaper rated this the 14th greatest album of all time. Are you kidding me?
I can see if they would say Morning Glory, but not this fucking record. I mean, Rockstar is a good song. Coffee, Cigarettes, is that what it's called? Or Alcohol and Cigarettes? I don't know.
Yeah, Cigarettes and Alcohol.
Yeah, that's a good song. But, you know, what was their hit? What was the big hit on that record?
It was Live Forever.
Did you ever feel the pain in the morning rain? I just sold you to the bone. Maybe I just want to fly, want to live, but don't want to die. Maybe I just want to breathe. Maybe I just don't believe. Maybe all the same as me. We see things I'll never see.
That's a great song.
Remember, they were saying shit like they were bigger than the Beatles and...
Well, they're just ridiculous and drunk, those boys. They just would always blast it and just talking shit. I don't know. I kind of thought they were funny. You know, they didn't give a shit. They were talking like they were in a bar. Like, you know,
all the time.
All the time. Yeah. And they would like fist fight each other and shit. Holy shit. They hate each other. They're in that. You know how much money they would get if they fucking got back together? They would play like huge arenas or stadiums, not arenas, stadiums. But.
And they just can't. They can't get their shit together, work with each other.
I don't get it.
I mean, even the Black Crowes are back together, right? Those two put their shit together, and the Kinks were working on it before COVID happened.
Just being in a band. Look at Mick and Keith. You don't get more brothers than they do. And they stuck it out for all these fucking years.
They also came out with an album in 1994, the Voodoo Lounge album.
See how I did that?
You did. And I picked it up right away. I was like, we're going to move them up. I'm going to move them up in the outline just to pick up what you're putting down, dude. I'm on it. Yeah, dude, Voodoo Lounge. I was listening to that driving into work today. It's like, it sounds so different than all this other stuff that's going on. But because they're the Stones, and we're gonna make a Stones record. And I was like You Got Me Rockin' is on there, and I'm like, dude, they'll still rip this when they go.
They played every night,
right? And it still kicks ass. Yeah, here. Yeah.
I was a butcher.
Record. That whole record is good.
They're really good at writing songs too that have like shit you want to sing along with.
Well, Mick's vocabulary and how he writes songs are unbelievable. Like my favorite story I probably talked about on the show before, Bono did a interview for Rolling Stone magazine for Mick Jagger back in the 80s, and Bono's asked Mick, how did you write all those songs? How did you come up? He said, I lived them. You know, can you imagine listening to some of these songs and like something like Brown Sugar? Yeah, you know, I live that song. It's like, you know,
it's a rough paper route. Yeah. Yeah, dude. Always. You can't go wrong with the Stones. They're the greatest rock and roll band of all time.
I like the new album.
I do too.
I got my 400-hour ticket ready to see them this
summer.
Did
you? Going
to
go? You're going?
Fuck yeah. Fuck nice. Yeah.
Right. We're saying they're like this year that the Eagles tickets were $100. Remember we paid like $300 a piece.
Well, we went and saw them on my birthday. We saw them
for your birthday, and we were like in the top back of the spectrum.
Oh.
Like the last row, but they still kicked ass.
Oh, that was a fun time.
All right, man. The album Wait from the Rollins Band.
There's
another
yeah.
album, man. I played fucking all the time. It's not on Spotify, but.
Wait, so his last studio album?
He did like two more after this, but this is the last one he fired the Rollins Band at some point and has like all new musicians. This band had like they had a little bit of like a jazzy kind of sound to them. There was like, there were different musicians.
Yeah. Totally different vibe than anything he did.
Here's Liar. I'll pull it up on YouTube.
Oh, I love it.
You want to know why?
He's definitely one of my favorite people in music.
Me too. He's one of the most interesting.
Absolutely. I went and saw him the year after the pandemic. I went and saw him. And
I got that poster.
It's autographed. It's autographed by him. And I got these little rock and roll kids that come in my bar. And they look at me, who's Henry Rollins? I was like, what the fuck? They ask me questions all the time. Do you know who Cream is? I'm like, no, motherfucker, I don't.
I love that Rollins Band album. That was the biggest hit he ever had. But
oh yeah,
love it.
Oh yeah, he's famous for being Henry Rollins.
He's like the Renaissance man of rock and roll music.
Yeah, well, he'll probably never make a rock and roll album again.
Yeah, he said he's largely done with music and all the bullshit that comes with it, and. He writes and he does like, you know, like a radio show, and he's got a podcast. He's all over the place.
But he is one of my heroes.
He's one of mine too. The next album is Throwing Copper from Live. I listened to this album so much.
You did. I know it's one of your favorites.
It is.
It's like your Desert Island album.
It is. It is. Yeah, I know. One of my favorites.
Yeah. I love this record, man.
I do too.
Yeah.
I remember when we worked in a music store, I had a post-it note in it saying that nobody was allowed to take this home because I would play it every day when I was in the store.
I remember it was like my favorite record of that year. And then like that lightning crash just blew up and I was like, oh my God, this song is so depressing.
They had a stretch of like they had four albums that were all pretty good. And then they just went down in the toilet. And
well, we went and saw them on the reunion. Was that the 20th anniversary?
It was with the other singer because they had another singer.
But it was the 20th anniversary. Yeah. Now it's the 30th.
Right. That's how quickly this shit changes. So, but yeah, here's a little bit of All Over You.
I love the drums on that, too. There's some great fills.
I've seen them 13 times, 14 times. Wow. It was cool because like I liked Mental Jewelry, the album before this.
Yeah, and it was like too.
When I first saw them, they played in like the Wildwood, New Jersey Convention Center. And it was like this small venue like for this, the beginning of this tour. And then I saw them on the last night of the Throwing Copper tour, and they played like the Spectrum in Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
And I was in like the second row, and it was like, it just was cool. And I'm like, Like I was so into them. Like right, you followed them as they got huge, and now they're they're playing small clubs, and Ed Kowalczyk's the only one still in the band, and they got a whole fucked up story. Like they lost all their money in some like investment scam and shit like that, and they all sued each other, and they just kind of fell apart. But
what a mess! What a mess!
For a while, they were writing like. In smart lyrics, right? He had all this spiritual
their
shit.
Their unplugged was great.
I watched that this weekend too. Yes, I had a bootleg of that, bootleg CD of it. Loved it. Do you remember Pride and Glory?
I remember the name.
It was a side project from Zach Wilde and two guys from White Lion. And they only made this one album. And I was like, oh, let me play something off of it because we'll never talk about them ever again.
I love White Lion. White Lion was a great band.
This was a pretty solid album, too. This was something that when I was looking through the list of albums that came out this year, I was like, oh, shit, I remember that. There's a song called Losing Your Mind. It's like heavy. There's a banjo in there.
Very Allman Brothers.
Yeah, like heavy Allman Brothers.
I dig it. I kind of cool. remember it. Yeah, I kind of remember it. I've listened to it.
You want to take a little break?
Yeah, brother.
And then I got a couple more rock albums, and we got some other odds and ends kind of shit that came up, and we'll get out of here.
All right, everybody, stick around.
We'll be back.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
I personally think a good pair of Doc Martens and a flannel shirt never go out of style. But some of the fashion from 1994 is probably a little dated these days. But you know what never goes out of style? A kick-ass pair of socks. And you can get a kick-ass pair of socks from Boldfoot Socks. Boldfoot makes great dress socks, casual socks, athletic socks, compression socks. I sound like Bubba Gump talking about all the different ways to make shrimp. Every pair of comfortable, durable socks are sewn in America from materials grown in America, and they donate 5% of all their proceeds to veteran-owned charities. You can check them out at boldfoot.com. Ryan, maybe we can meet up with Josh since we're going to be out in Vegas in January 2025 for a couple days. Maybe we can return the favor when he came to McCusker's.
Vegas, baby, Vegas. the Prisoners are going to Vegas, baby.
Yes, I know Josh. Josh listens regularly, but I'll be dropping you an email, brother, let you know when we get our plans locked down.
Hell yeah!
Right on.
Damn, that song sounds great in a headset. I want to bounce it off the wall right now, bro.
Thanks so much for sticking with
it. I never felt like that with that song before.
That's a great album, dude. That's obviously Machine Head off of 16 Stone by Bush. They still kick ass, man. I've seen them a couple times over the years.
I like him, Gavin, whatever his name is.
Rosdale.
I tend to like really good people, really nice people, and I had a few friends that met him and said how genuinely nice he was and just calm and very cool and polite and talk for a little while. So I really like him a lot.
That's awesome. I saw him, I think it was with Live a couple of years ago, and he did a thing. It was, you know, one of those outdoor concert venues, and he came up on the lawn and he was running all through the crowd and singing, and like he went like right by my daughter, and my daughter like touched his arm or something. But she had that total like, oh my God,
excited. And he's like a dreamboat.
So it's like it was just a cool moment for her, and I know she's a big fan, and so that album still holds up.
Oh yeah, if you were like, let's go see Bush, I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still making music or what they're.
I'm sure he's still around. You know that. I give him so much fucking props. When Woodstock 99 happened, Korn came on and fucking destroyed the motherfucking place. Like, the riot was ready to happen then. The next band was Bush. What's he do? He comes out and plays Listerine for the whole fucking crowd to chill the fuck out.
Just dial it down.
Dude, it was an amazing moment. And like, whoa. He just took the whole place in his hand and just chilled the whole fucking place out. It was unreal. And Woodstock 99 was very awful if you caught some of those documentaries.
Monster from REM.
I like the Frequency song.
Do you? All right, here.
I like that song because my band plays that song and we kick the shit out of it.
Okay.
Can I plug a gig?
Yes, please.
My band, High Street Records, will be playing McCusker's May the 4th. It's going to be a Star Wars theme party because May the 4th be with you. It's going to be a hell of a time. I suggest everybody get there.
It's your fucking show, man. You don't have to ask if you could plug something. What the hell? I appreciate that, but, you know, not necessary.
So tell the warden May the 4th.
I'm sure he'll be there. He's probably he's camping out right now. Speaking of camping out, I camped out to get tickets to see REM on this tour. Because back in the day, kids, when you had to, before the internet, you would sleep outside in a parking lot.
They were the
outside
best
of
times.
A Ticketmaster to go. Right. You'd talk to people,
everybody,
right?
I had some of the greatest times in a parking lot waiting for concert tickets to go on sale, even like during the winter, because the summer tickets would go on sale during the winter, so you'd be down at the Spectrum freezing your balls off in this time of year for a show in June. You know,
I went to this concert and it was one of the worst shows I've ever seen. Like, he was singing off of sheet music, and
He's a little bit too much for me.
Some of their albums, like the Out of Time is a really good album, I think came out in 91. This one was so, it's so different than anything they ever did, right? Because they try to be like a rocker. And I think it was a couple years ago. I tried to go back and listen to it again to see if my opinions changed, and I never got into it.
No, I'm not an REM fan at all. I like that song. We, you know, I play it, and I do like The End of the World and whatever like that. But
Dave Matthews Band, dude, they're Under the Table and Dreaming comes out. I remember when this album came out, and a record rep was giving away tickets to see them because they were not a thing yet. They weren't popular.
No, yeah. But I remember this album came out, and then the next album, Crash, came out, and they were playing stadiums.
And they're like Buffett now. Like, they tour every year. I have friends that go every single year to go see them. I've kind of lost track of the music they've been making.
They're like the poor man's version of Fish. Like, all the people that Fish is too much for them, they tend to follow Dave Matthews because, you know, he's a little bit easier to understand his music. But
makes sense.
I like Dave, but he puts a record out every year. I don't want to go see him because I'm not going to know any of his fucking songs. You know, I haven't listened to him since the Crash album.
I think that's about where I spun out with him too. And I remember, I mean, shit, that album, we were working together at the time, and we were playing it. We would play that every, like a summer afternoon, you know, like a Tuesday, there's not a lot of people in the store. We were blasting that working at Blockbuster Music. Ants but Marching is a the end of Ants Marching, man, when they really, you know, when you see them live and they bring it, is really cool.
Oh, yeah. Buford Card is a great drummer, man. I haven't heard that song in 20 years, and what a great fucking song that is, man.
It is a good tune. I was just thinking, I wonder if they still close with that. I'll have to ask my friend at work that goes.
They play, they're like Fish, they're like the Grateful Dead. They play a different set every night. So you never know what they're going to catch. Yeah. They may play that once every four shows, you know?
All right. I know, like, they've had some turnover in the band. Like, we talked about them a couple months ago, and I was like, oh,
yeah, they
shit,
turned over our toilet. They turned over the bus toilet.
Right. Chicago. Ah, shit. Literally. Ah, yeah, shit. Literally.
All over those poor people.
Yep. The album When I Woke by Rusted Root came out in 1994. It is a great record. And everybody knows that song, Send Me On My Way.
Yeah.
I also put the song Ecstasy on here.
That is my fucking jam.
I was going to think, dude, the drumming on that is, they bring it. All right, here. Yes.
They're a great band.
That album is awesome. I haven't listened to that album in 20 years, but
that was a staple in the bar. We had that.
Was it?
When back in the day when you had the jukebox with CDs in it, that was a staple in our jukebox. I seen them. The first time I saw them was on the Page and Plant tour, and it had to be like 94. And they opened up for Plant and Page, and they came out and they kicked the shit out of it. And while we're standing there, they're handing out pamphlets about, like, the bio of the band. Tom Petty discovered them.
Really?
Yeah.
I knew some of them were from New Jersey, and they kind of came up in, like, the Pittsburgh area. I saw them around that time, too. It wasn't with Page and Plant. I don't remember who it was. But
I saw them at the Tower Theater in Upper Darby, Philadelphia. And what a great fucking show that was, too.
That might have been where I saw them. Yeah, dude, hearing that, because they have like two drummers. And it's just...
They're another jam band. They're like a jam band.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really... That's a great album. And, I mean, that song, Send Me My Way, is still in like commercials and movies, and it's all over the place. But,
oh, yeah. You hear it everywhere. Speaking of jam bands, you know, Rusted Root was a jam band. Dave Matthews was a jam band. Do you remember Blues Traveler?
Yeah, of course. Dude. How could I not forget them? Like, one, John Popper went to high school with my wife, and two,
That's right.
You've talked to him like four times and read his comments on the show.
I haven't talked to him in a while, but he's a great dude. He's very down to earth. Like, you know, he was interested in what I had to say about a few things, and he commented on a few things I had to say, and we agreed on a few things. And I was like, oh my God, I knew something about music. I knew something.
Yeah, I remember he was chiming in on like the Beatles or Stones debate and some other stuff. Yeah. And
he wrote like two paragraphs.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, dude, this album comes out and this album was huge. I mean, I remember them making a big deal about he was the one who was playing harmonica on the Dave Matthews Band album.
That's like, right.
Right. So like
the other song. Yeah. The other song.
Blues Traveler broke a little before Dave Matthews Band did.
Yeah. I saw them on this tour, and man, they were so fucking good. They're such a great live band. What do I got on there? Hook?
You got Run Around. Hook's another good song. Run Around's a good song.
Oh, once upon a midnight, dear, you woke with something in my head. I couldn't escape the
That song is another one you hear on the radio like all the time, but
yeah,
you don't really hear like
good albums out. They put a few great albums out.
They did.
The one after this was really good.
You just don't hear a lot of like pop rock, like songs like that anymore.
What was the last time we heard from them? Was in that commercial. They were in that commercial last year or 2 years ago.
Speaking of jam bands, one of your favorite jam bands came out with an album in 1994, right? Phish came out with the album Hoist.
This was their like attempt to make a mainstream album. And this was like when I first start listening to them, they got my attention with this song. Right when I heard this song, I jumped up and I was like, who is this? And I have to hear more of it.
Right on.
So let's hear a little bit. It's called Down With Disease.
Waiting for the time when I can finally see. This has all been wonderful, but now I'm on my way. When I think it's time to leave it all behind, I try to find a way to, but there's nothing I can say to make it stop.
Sounds like a Primus riff.
Oh, dude, Trey has a band with Les Claypool, the
Oysterhead.
Yeah, dude, I heard the song, and my friends are like, "We're gonna go see them." And at this time, the only bands I was listening to was Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue, and then they took me to see this fucking thing. And Bruce, it was a culture shock. It was like, I guess people, how they describe in the 60s when they discover the Grateful Dead, and it was the greatest moment of their life.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, I even have a tattoo of a cassette tape that says Phish on it. It has the date of the show that I went to.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because they were big on bootlegs on cassettes, and I had many cassettes of different live shows from, you know, a lot of their shows from even in 94, 93, 92. So I had to get a little tattoo of a cassette Phish tape, man.
That's very cool.
They merely made a big, huge impact on my life.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we got a couple other albums that are on here. The Cranberries debut album came out. The Cranberries No Need to Argue album came out. And that's a song that had a Zombie on it. Well, that song's it's been played over a billion times on Spotify. Shit.
Jesus.
Right? 3, 6. Yeah, a billion times. Wow. Jeez. Okay. Wow. It's a good song. I was like, that good, but
they got numbers like we do.
Yeah, right. All right. I wonder if the warden played that song 5,000 times in a row, like all of our numbers. Yeah, dude. I mean, it was a decent album. It was just a different sound.
I like Zombie, you know, I'm sure we're going to play that one. But I like do you have to? Do you have to let it linger? I like that one better.
That was like their first album, though.
Okay.
Yeah, that was before this. But yeah, we could play a little bit of Zombie. Give it a billion and one plays on Spotify.
Nice. God, that song was huge.
It was so different for them too, much like the What's a Frequency, Kenneth, like just going left and going heavier, plugging in.
Yeah, who knew when she came out that she had balls like that, man. You know, it's a shame she just passed away like a couple years ago. Yeah, she was a great singer, a great Irish woman also, I must add.
There you go. Hootie and the Blowfish's Cracked Rearview Mirror. I don't care. I fucking love this album. I love that song. That song, Hold My Hand, is just perfect pop song. Man.
What are you going to play?
I was going to play Hold My Hand, but
Hold My Hand.
We don't need to play it. You play just sang it.
Come on.
All right.
With a little love and some tenderness. We'll walk upon the water, we'll rise above the mist, with a little peace and some harmony. We'll take the world together, we'll take them by the hand. 'Cause I got a hand for you.
I believe they're doing their 30th anniversary run.
They are. I was at work today and was talking to my boss about I actually went to high school with my boss, and I was telling him that I was what I was doing tonight, and I brought up Hootie, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to see them. My kids got me tickets for Christmas."
Yeah. Remember how big deal they had the Hootie condoms?
I don't remember. No,
they were selling condoms at their concert called the Hootie condoms.
It was on
MTV News and everything. Oh yeah, that's what I remember about the Hootie and the Blowfish. Cover your Hootie.
Oh my God, I'll look it up later. I don't remember that. They're just a college rock band that made it big.
They were a great band. They're a great pop band. I love a few of their songs on that record.
They take a lot of shit, you know, over the years, but they're not as bad as they weren't as good as everybody thought they were, and they're not as bad as all the backlash. But
what's the song they have? It's Time.
Yeah, Time.
That is a great fucking song.
Yeah.
That is a great fucking song.
And he's become a huge he's a friggin' enormous country music guy now.
God bless him.
Another college band, or like standard issue 90s band, that had put out an album in 1994 was Toad the Red Sprocket.
Ugh.
I fucking love that. I know you don't like them.
Oh,
we've had to edit out things you've said about that.
Walk on the water,
man. That was 1991.
Oh, okay.
But here, this is what they came out with in 1994.
I've called and never speak. You would say nothing's changed.
I went back and listened to that whole album this weekend, ready for the show. Love it.
I used to fuck with this kid in high school that wore a Toad shirt. I used to break his balls all the time.
Loser from Beck came out.
Man, what groundbreaking this was. This is really groundbreaking.
In the dark.
Dude, he is so fucking awesome. I seen him open up for the Rolling Stones up in Hershey, and he fucking brought it, man. He had a stage show. I hope he gets in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one day. He's so different. It's so groundbreaking. See how we're talking about recordings and the sound of recording and like how the Green Day album's too clean sounding? That shit sounds more punk rock than that fucking shit does.
He's more, yeah, that lo-fi sound. It's not really.
I wonder what he recorded on. I'm sure he recorded on something vintage or maybe like a four track, you know, because it's just a very few things are going on.
I respected him a lot more when I started reading a little bit more about him, like how he would play a lot of the instruments or even the.
Oh, yeah.
It's later, but like all the vocals on like that, the two turntables and a microphone, like it's all him just layered up on top of him, each other.
He uses the studio as an instrument.
Yeah. Tori Amos came out with an album this year, and she is a maybe a descendant of Kate Bush. Ugh. But album, I like this album. She got weird in her later albums, but this is the album like Cornflake Girl is on, and here's a little bit of the song God.
Sometimes you just don't come through. God, sometimes you just don't come through. You need a woman to look after you.
Yeah, I like her more than I like Kate Bush.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Yeah. She's, you know, she like brought her mental illness to her music, you know, like
the dolphin sound at the beginning is a little much, but this era of Tori Amos, I like. I think I saw her a couple times too.
Dude, you know, the snobs are going to put her in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we might have bought some time with Kate Bush getting in. I got two more on my list, and then if we can go through some odds and ends, but Jeff Buckley's Grace album came out.
Oh God, I love his version of Hallelujah, man.
I listened to this album again this week too, and man, he had just such a cool voice.
Different voice. Something original, something unique. And he died young. He died before he got famous.
He had this album, and he was recording his second album, and he was taking a break from recording, and he was recording in Memphis, and he went into the Mississippi River to go for a swim, and a tugboat went by, and he got sucked into the wake of the tugboat. He had somebody in his band, they had some instruments or like an amp or shit on the side of the banks of the Mississippi, and when the wake started coming up, it was like going to splash the instrument, and one of his buddy who wasn't swimming went and picked him up and moved him. And when he turned around, Jeff Buckley was gone, and he just got sucked under, and they found him like a couple days later.
I remember reading that his father died, also drowned in the Mississippi River. Also, his father was a musician.
His father died of a drug overdose. So
then
I had heard that exact same thing, and I looked it up today to see, because I was like, I remember that story, and he said he died of a drug overdose.
Okay. I heard that like fucking 30 years ago.
So did I.
Drowned in the same.
Yeah. So did I.
Yeah.
His mom released his second album that wasn't finished too, which was really good. It came out like 2 years later. But so he covered Hallelujah from Leonard Cohen. And it is just.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Does he do it better than Leonard?
No,
I'll leave it alone.
I don't think so. But Leonard Cohen's version is like, it's like meaner. Like there's like a Leonard Cohen has like a disgruntled edge to him. Like,
he's a stylist.
The only thing I learned about love is to outdrew somebody you. Like the lines just have more like angst to them when Leonard sings them.
When the verse comes, I was like, but you don't like music, do you? What an amazing line that is. Hit it.
Here's here.
And she tied you to her kitchen chair. And she broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Fucking chilling, man.
It really is, dude.
He's an angel, man. Wow.
There's just that big clean guitar sound, and yeah. Then the way each verse as it progresses, his voice gets more powerful.
It's a different song than the one that Leonard Cohen did.
Yeah, it's a different.
He made it his own, you know.
That seems like something. Like, I don't watch a lot of American Idol, but it seems like every season, some Nick tries to cover that song and be like, "Why? Like, why? Like, you're never gonna do it justice." Much like somebody tries to cover like a Queen song. Like, you're never gonna come close.
The worst cover of that song I've ever heard was in the first Shrek film, and Mike Myers is singing it in like a low point of the movie. And I'm like, listen, I'm like, get the fuck out of here with this. Like, I couldn't believe it. Shrek voice singing this song. It's sacrilegious, bro. Yeah. I heard a great story about Dylan and Leonard Cohen hanging out. And Leonard Cohen's like, oh, I love that Blood on the Tracks album. You know, Dylan's like, you know, one song, it took me 2 weeks to write it. You know, it was really pain in the ass. He's like, I love your Hallelujah song. He's like, oh, thanks a lot. It took me 10 years to write it.
Leonard Cohen has a song about getting a blowjob from Janis Joplin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's called the Chelsea Hotel or Chelsea Inn or Room 49 at the Chelsea or something. It was like, there you were at the edge of the bed giving me head. And it's about Janis Joplin and Jesus. About how like they broke up and he still loved her or something. But anyway.
God. She's a train wreck.
Yeah. Save that for the
another episode.
All right. The last album we had on here was another album that, dude, this is in my top 10 albums from the 90s. And that's Dummy from Portishead.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about it this week. Like, this album was what introduced me to like music could be more than just, I was listening to a lot of like, you know, heavier shit and rock and roll. That music could be weird and different and like electronic and, yep. Nothing has ever sounded like this album.
Nothing. I agree with you. It's a one-of-a-kind thing, bro.
Even their other albums that they put out with didn't stick the mark as much as this one did. I love it. I still listen to it. This is Mr. Ons.
Oh, I love the sound of that snare drum.
Oh, it's haunting. They are man. Really interesting that a lot of the samples, so like the one dude in the band was into collecting like music, like old like movie soundtracks. He said he didn't even know some of the movies. He would just collect them, and that was where he would pull all the samples. And then later in their career, they were running out of ideas, or other people were ripping them off. So then they would write music, like they would write scores to soundtracks and then sample their own shit. Like they would, like, I'm going to write a song that we're never going to use for anything just so I can pull a sample from it to make more music. So,
wow.
Super interesting, man. And they
yeah, know, like, that's a way to do it.
Really interesting. I like all that like trip hop music, like Massive Attack and all that shit like that. But that Portishead album, man, is just, it's just one of my favorites. So I think that's it for the albums. I got some other just stuff I'll just run through real quick. Like, I was looking up like soundtracks, like the Crow soundtrack came out this year. Oh, man, that was enormous.
Yes. That changed shit. That changed shit.
Like Stone Temple Pilots was on that.
The Cure song on there is fucking great.
There was a whole ton of stuff. The Natural Born Killers soundtrack came out.
Oh,
that
was
too.
A great one too. Oh yeah.
That was
like
that
a
was
Nine Inch Nails kind of thing, wasn't it?
Leonard Cohen was on that. That was the first time I got introduced to Leonard Cohen. L7 was on there, a bunch of other guys. Years of like hip hop. So, man, there was some big stuff like Nas's first album came out. Warren G, like Regulate, that song Regulate. Came out. TLC's album, the one with
Waterfalls.
Waterfalls.
That was a huge album.
It was. The Beastie Crazy, Boys. Sexy, cool. Crazy, Sexy, Cool. Correct. The Beastie Boys, man, they come back with Sabotage. We should probably play a little bit of that.
Pump it up. Wow, they really like gave a curveball when they pulled that shit out. I think one of the best moments of the MTV Music Awards is when Green Day played, and then the stage rotated, and the fucking Beastie Boys came out and played that song. Amazing.
And then there was a debut album by this guy.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies. The back of the club, sipping my wet is where you find me. The back of the club, macking holes, my crew's behind me. Mad question asking, blunt passing, music blasting. But I just can't quit because one of these homies Biggie got to creep with, sleep with, keep the epicene.
He was the greatest ever, man. He fucking flowed. He was so smooth for a big guy that he was, you know, just a B.I.G. I mean, he changed shit. What can I say?
The beats that he played, it's not like we said, like a lot of this, like, you know, like rhythm and blues music of the 90s sucks. Like the music he sampled was all decent. I was just said fresh, but it's like
we could use all the terms tonight.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I got my bingo board in front of me, but
Puffy knew what he was doing. Puffy knew exactly how to market him. He knew what kind of backbeat music he needed to go with his style. Puffy's a smart motherfucker.
What I remember reading something with him, he was talking to Lil' Kim or something. And Lil' Kim was like, yeah, I want to be a star. And he was like, you got to write every day. He's like, why do you not have a pen in your hand right now? He's like, you gotta work at this. You just don't go out and make this. And just, you know, for as much as a dude that he had a rough upbringing, you know, slinging drugs and stuff, but he was like, this is a craft and you gotta work at it.
It's like any musician, and he was a hell of a musician. Yep. He wasn't a rapper. He was a musician, and he was fucking unbelievable.
The Brian Setzer's Orchestra came, their debut album came out this year.
Jump Jive Whale.
Yeah, just, you know, that brought all that shit together.
The Superheads and all that shit.
The Beatles Live at the BBC Collection came out.
Oh, that was great.
There's some awesome stuff on there, man. Covering some early rock and roll.
I had that on vinyl.
Dude, that must sound awesome.
It is fucking great.
Johnny Cash's American Recordings 1, so that's like his first partnership with Rick Rubin. And then I mentioned the monologue. Mariah Carey's friggin' Christmas album came out this year, so she transformed from a soul singer
to the Snow Queen. Ugh. It's like what we talk about, man. What are you going to be known for? And,
right.
You know, who knows? Man, all the amazing music that she made. Amazing music. And the only fucking thing someone cares about is the Christmas song. Unreal.
She probably never needs to work again.
Good for her.
I think that's it, dude. Is there any other songs you want to talk about?
No, man. I'm all 1994'd out, bro.
Yeah, I am too. There's a bunch of, like, you know, random singles and stuff, but they're all on the playlist. You can go back and check them out. So let's get to the back end of the show. I got some music news. So the first was the Grammys were this past weekend on February 4th. So some highlights. Billy Joel played a new song for the first. It's the first new song.
Sucks.
Did it? I didn't listen to it.
Yeah, it sucks.
Okay. Taylor Swift became the first artist to ever win Album of the Year 4 times. So she was, I think Sinatra had three and a couple other people.
The Swifties. They took over the world.
Yep. And then the big thing was Luke Combs performed Fast Car with Tracy Chapman on stage. And
yeah, I heard.
She sounded great, man. I know you don't like that song, but it was a cool moment when music is so divisive and you had like country dude and a black woman, like a gay totally black woman, like on the stage. Like it was a cool moment.
I totally get it. I give her mad props. It's just, you know, a bummer, man.
And she also doesn't like, she's not in the public much anymore. So it was cool. It was cool to see her and she sounded good. The country music star Toby Keith passed away.
I heard that today.
Yeah. So he had stomach cancer. He was ill for quite a while. He was ill for a while. He was all over country music, man, in the 90s. He had
American guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, take this job and shove it kind of thing, right?
Yeah, like we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. He did a lot of stuff like it was a song he sang like at the Pentagon for the troops and he released it, I'm sure you've heard Red Solo Cup 8,000 times in the bar.
Is that him?
Yeah. So like maybe he's not that bad he died.
I heard the Red Solo Cup died. The guy who invented
the Solo Cup? Oh.
He died this week.
Oh. Okay.
That's what I read anyway.
All right, Kerry King announced he's got a solo album coming out. So
nice, Mr. King.
Former Slayer guitar player Kerry King debuted his new band and released a single called Idle Hands. He said it was a song he wrote when he was in Slayer, but he never released it. Kerry King said that his manager, promoter, and his record label all wanted Phil from Pantera to be the lead singer for this band. Kerry King said, like, they're good friends, but he's like, it's just not a fit. So he's got the lead singer from a band called Death Angel.
He's great.
Is he? All right, so...
Yeah.
He released a single called Idle Hands. I haven't listened to this yet, but
I want to hear it.
So begins my revolution. Violence spreads my retribution. It's a great retaliation. I can't believe what I see with my own eyes. Can't just accept the truth of all the lies. Ideology is at the core. Deceiver, I'll believe in your faith.
I fucking love it.
Okay.
And it's just not because I'm friends with Mr. King.
Right. You did shots of Jägermeister with Kerry King.
I did. He was one intense dude to be around.
He was a very nice guy.
He was so nice. Like, let me just say, he was so fucking nice. But he is very intimidating.
I could tell just by looking at him. Yeah, dude, I was never like a huge Slayer fan, but I was digging that.
No, dude, it sounds different than Slayer. I give it that. It doesn't sound like Slayer at all.
Second thoughts. Saw that there's a We Are the World documentary on Netflix.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I watched it.
Yeah, we watched, my wife and I watched it too. It was cool. It was nice that Waylon Jennings was actually like, they had the video
they
of
showed
him in there.
Walking off stage. I'm glad we did our show first.
It was nice that we were in front
above
of
the curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
nobody could say we were biting off anybody.
So if you watch that and you want to go learn more, we did an episode on it and then got some feedback on our Doors episode. John Corrali on Facebook said, thanks for posting this. I can't wait to listen. The Doors are my favorite growing up. I got a hold of No One Gets Out of Here Alive and a copy of Soft Parade, and the rest was history. And then on YouTube, the YouTube user McNowski said, Jim Morrison was just a young buck when he died, so he obviously was both brilliant and a buffoon. Who says you can't be both?
Beautiful.
I feel the same way, brother.
I love how, I don't know who you are, but I love you, pal.
Feel the same way. All right, the electric chair. I got something this week, man.
Yeah, you sent me. I was like, I refuse to listen to this.
Oh, no, I was going to play the Lisa Loeb. I was going to kill Lisa Loeb.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
We could kill that other one some other time.
No, let's do Lisa Loeb.
All right.
Where do we start? This coffee house fucking song. Ugh.
Yeah. So this song came out in 1994. And
I have a thing for Girl with Glasses. I can't help it. Yeah.
Sure. But this song, man, is...
I knew somebody who played a gig with her and she thought she was hot shit.
Lisa Loeb acted like she was hot shit?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude.
Like she wouldn't like talk to anybody or anything. You know, like it was like a coffee house gig.
I didn't like this song when it came out. I don't like it now. I don't like it when it comes on the radio.
This was for a movie, wasn't it? This was for Reality Bites.
Was it?
Yeah. I think this was in Reality Bites.
I think, yeah, this song Bites. It's,
yeah, I'm an asshole.
We sentence you to death.
I had to turn my microphone off, dude, because I was laughing so loud.
Oh, my God.
I'm an asshole. I kill me, dude. I think I'm the funniest guy around.
That song sucks, dude. So that'll do it for
I love doing this show with you, pal. I laugh all the time. It's fucking great.
That'll do it for episode 78. If you want to take more of a trip back to the music of 1994, there's a link to our episode playlist in the show notes. Go check out the full versions of all these songs, even that one, and support these artists, even her. You can support us by following us on your favorite podcast platform, leaving us a review, and telling somebody about us. You can also drop us an email, check out our website, connect with us on social media, or stop by the legendary McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia if you're in that part of the world. There are links to all that stuff, including a map to the bar down at the show notes. This was fun, dude. I really enjoyed this trip.
I hope everybody had fun with us, man. Yeah. Bruce, as always, keep on rocking.
Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.